The U.S. Open tennis tournaments begin next week at Forest Hills in New York. And while fans will focus on the competition, my guest Doug Spreen will be worrying about blisters, cramps, and other injuries of the players who launch 120-mile-an-hour serves and run full speed for 3 hours in the August heat and humidity. The exertion alone has on occasion left well-conditioned athletes delirious with heat exhaustion. Spreen is an athletic trainer for the ATP, the Professional Tennis Tour. For 9 years, he's been on the court in high-stakes matches, responsible for treating the aches and pains of the world's best male tennis players, often with a 3-minute clock ticking. Doug Spreen was an assistant trainer for the Cincinnati Reds before joining the Pro Tennis Tour. He was also the head trainer for tennis players at the Olympics, both in 1996 and 2000. Now, players will be playing the U.S. Open in a hot part of the year. And heat and humidity can certainly take a toll on players. And I wonder if the death of Corey Stringer, the Minnesota Vikings player who died at training camp 2 years ago, has affected the thinking on the part of tennis pros and trainers about the dangers of that.
Well, it has always been a concern for us because for a decent part of the year, we kind of chase the sun and we chase the heat ourselves. And it's tough. I mean, it's not uncommon for our guys to be playing in 90 degree plus weather when it's humid, and court temperatures can reach 130, 140 on the hard courts. And you know, these guys can be out there for 3 or 4 hours. So heat illness and you know, heat exhaustion are definitely part of our game. The fortunate thing we have in tennis is our guys are able to wear shorts and short sleeve shirts, and they don't have to pile all that equipment on them. We don't really deal so much with the core temperatures. We just deal with a lot of dehydration. It's amazing how much fluid somebody can lose in 2-3 hours on a tennis court.
How much can they lose?
We've actually had guys tested. Guys who have had problems with cramping and with the heat in the past, we've actually sent them to some labs and had them tested. And it is not uncommon under exercise conditions for these guys to test at losing 2.5, 3. We even had an athlete test out at losing over 4 liters of fluid an hour, and that's a tremendous amount of fluid. And it really physiologically is only possible to put about 2 liters at the most back into your system an hour. And so 2-3 hours on a tennis court, you can quickly become several liters behind in your fluid.
So what do you do?
Well, if it's during a match, it's a matter of trying to manage the situation as best you can. Get as much fluid as you can in on changeovers, trying to keep yourself cool. And then after a match, it's really important for a player to work on hydration almost immediately after a match. One of the things we find is that both with hydration and with nutrition, with food, is that the body uses a greater percentage of what you put in it in the first 2 hours after activity, after exercise. And so one of the things that you really have to avoid in hot weather is the cumulative effects. And this is something that may have happened with Corey Stringer, may happen with other people. They're fine for a day or two exercising in the heat, but what they do is they don't replace the fluids that they've lost on a day-to-day basis. And so after one day, they're a half a liter behind. Another day, they're 2 liters behind, and all of a sudden, the third day of exercise, now they're putting themselves in danger. So we really stress with our players that immediately when they get off court, they've really got to focus on drinking and eating something and trying to get themselves prepared for the next match. If that's a day or two later, the preparation for that match starts as soon as they get off the court.
Do tennis players use steroids or other performance-enhancing drugs?
I would think that the usage is very, very minimal, if any. We have a extremely good drug testing program in the ATP. These guys are tested. I was just talking to somebody who told me the other day they've been tested 14 times so far this year. And I don't get the sense. I've been in the game now for 9 years, and we've had so few guys test positive that really is not a big issue in our sport. Tennis is a sport that really goes to the issue of repetitive activity. And if you watch guys hit forehands and backhands, it's not about muscling a ball. It's not about all the power being delivered on one shot. And every the motion in tennis, the serve, forehand, backhand, it's a fluid motion. and you will see an enormous amount of range of motion. You take a guy like an Andy Roddick, and before he hits a serve, the how far back his shoulder gets, his hand gets in cocking to hit that serve, is amazing. And that's really, not only is he strong, but he also develops it because he's got such great range of motion that he can develop that power over a pretty good distance. And so for an athlete, especially in tennis where flexibility is so important, to become muscle bound is really counterproductive.
You said that tennis is a real endurance sport. Is that why tennis players are younger than other athletes, why they don't last into their late 20s and 30s?
Andre Agassi right now seems to be the guy that is going against that trend. He's 33. He's held himself together. He's been relatively injury-free, and the guy's still, you know, ranked in the top three or four in the world right now. Won the Australian Open, and at the U.S. Open, he'll be one of the favorites. But it seems like when our guys reach the age of 30, that seems to be a time when they seem to be retiring. Tennis is a young person's sport, and it's a sport that the guys are so close in their competition right now. There's so little that separates anybody in the top 100 that just the fact of getting to a certain age and losing half a step or losing a little bit of pop on that serve or that forehand can make a huge difference. There's not many matches that we have anymore that are blowouts. And so just losing 1 or 2% off your game makes a huge difference. And so you don't see many guys reach their mid-30s and they're still out here playing.
Now, in other pro sports, athletes have their own trainers and coaches right there. Tennis is different, right?
Yeah, tennis is different. You know, it's different working in an individual sport because I'm responsible for all the guys. And so it's I'm in a unique position as an athletic trainer that when I send two guys on court, I've maybe prepared both those guys. Often, two guys that are going out on court before a match are sitting on two treatment tables right next to each other, getting ready to go out on court, and I have to be ready to help both guys.
Why doesn't tennis permit each player to bring their own trainer and medical staff onto the court?
They do permit them to bring their own trainer, their own massage therapist, their own conditioning coach, their own coaches to a tournament, credentialed. They can work with those people before and after matches. But one of the reasons that they don't allow it during matches is because there are rules, first of all, of how we can, what we can treat and for how long we can treat people. And the other thing is that it's a duration sport. It's a sport that physical condition is definitely a part of it. And so it's very important to have somebody neutral to make that decision when it's appropriate for somebody to receive some medical care, to receive some medical treatment, in essence, cause a short break in the match. And we want to have as little break as we can in the match. One of the things that I always think about when I go on court is if I go on court to treat a player, I got to realize that the other player on the other side of the net is also being affected by the potential delay, the potential just sometimes mentally it can wear on you. Is the guy I'm playing really hurt or not hurt? Is he playing games with me? And I got to remember that it affects the other guy on the other side of the court. And so I've got to try and treat those guys fairly. And that's a part of my job. And that's part of letting the guys' tennis do the talking on the court.
What are the rules that govern an injury timeout if a player has a cramp or a problem?
Well, a player can receive a 3-minute, what we call a medical timeout, on court for an injury. When I get called onto court, I have evaluation time. I get a chance to evaluate the problem or the injury with a player, and that evaluation time is unlimited, meaning if we felt it was serious enough that a player had a heart condition or just something that was potentially dangerous, we can call for a doctor to come on court. That happens less than 0.1% of the time. Usually we try and do our evaluation very quickly, 30 seconds. A lot of times we can. The guy says, hey, I have a blister on my foot. That takes about 2 seconds to evaluate at the fact that his foot's bleeding. But we try and do an evaluation for whatever the problem is as quickly as we can. Get it done in 30 seconds. And then once I start doing anything for the player, if it's taping, if it's massaging, if it's doing some exercises or some stretching, I have a total of 3 minutes to do whatever I can with the player to help him. And after that, we're then allowed to treat the player for 2 changeovers. So the 90 seconds that they have between every second game, we can then go back on court sometime during the match and treat him for 90 seconds.
Now, there was a controversy at the U.S. Open 2 years ago at a match between Justin Gimelstob and Mikhail Tabara. After the match, Tabara thought that Gimelstob had been faking an injury during the match in order to gain time because he wasn't in as good a condition. And, in fact, he said that he actually spit at him after the match, and this came up in the post-game press conference with Gimelstob. Do you recall being in that one? Do you recall the injury timeouts?
You know, I recall the spitting, or the alleged spitting, I think that was more of a case. You get that sometimes after matches. Guys aren't happy with the fact that a guy called for the trainer and had an injury, and sometimes guys just aren't happy with the way a guy carries himself on the court. But I do remember that situation, and Justin Gimelstob is a guy who's had problems with the heat and heat exhaustion and cramping in the past, probably as much as anybody. And one of the things that once I explain it to players is that Justin's problem and his issues is not the fact that he doesn't work hard enough, and it's not the fact that he's not in good condition. Justin is one of those guys that has an enormous sweat rate. This guy literally can cause a pool of sweat around him. He is losing liters and liters and liters of fluid during each match. And so he literally is a guy that his physiologic makeup causes him to lose more fluids than he can possibly put into his system. And so he does have problems with cramping. And, one of the things that's difficult for like a Mikhail Tabara in that situation and for tennis players is sometimes there's guys out there that no matter what, they never have cramped. And so they don't understand how other guys can have cramping.
Gimelstob said in his post-match press conference that if any of the reporters doubted him, they could talk to Doug Spreen. Did anybody come to you and ask you what happened?
Yeah, a couple reporters did come and talk to me, and in that case, I was able to say with 100% conviction that Justin was suffering from muscle cramps and that he had played by the rules.
You mentioned earlier that before matches, players are often side by side on training tables or in locker rooms. Do they ever pick up information about little problems, injuries, or vulnerabilities, and then try to exploit them in the match?
That only makes sense that they do that. I think one of the things is there aren't that many secrets. If a guy's getting his shoulder treated 2 or 3 times a day, people can pretty much pick up on that he's at least got some soreness in that shoulder. There are a lot of times, though, when guys go on court and their opponent knows nothing of what's going on. And when it is appropriate, we will make sure that a player has his privacy, that we communicate with that player in private, even find a way to treat that guy privately so that whatever he's got going can be a secret. But in a game where the guys live and exist so closely together, and there aren't many secrets. And also, players can pick up on another guy's weakness and another guy's problem pretty quickly out on court. They know each other so well. They've played against each other. They've probably scouted the other player. And they can tell when all of a sudden, hey, this guy's not serving like he normally does. They'll be able to pick up on that something may be amiss with their opponent.
Doug Spreen, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Doug Spreen is athletic trainer for the Professional Tennis Tour. Next week, he'll be at Forest Hills in New York for the U.S. Open.